Ninth lecture, Third Joburg ACC, Tuesday, 7th February, 8/11. All right. So many things I could talk to you about. That you'd get very confused about the whole thing. I know that. Because I say that you do the auditing of the PC and you get confused. That's because you've been leaning very, very hard, leaning extremely hard on a system and on technology, don't you see? Now, it's perfectly all right to lean on these things because it couldn't be done without them. But at the same time, you're the one who does the auditing. If you understand that with great clarity, then you can take up your next step. What are you auditing? And that's what I'd better talk to you about. What are you auditing? What are you doing, really? I can actually tell you in a sentence or so. You're uninhibiting the creativeness of an individual. That's all you're doing. Now, that sounds like a fantastic oversimplification. In view of the fact that many people, in fact most people, audit in the direction of repression of creativeness at first, it doesn't make too much sense that you're auditing to uninhibit it. What creativeness? Well, there's a thing called the reactive mind, which is composed of engrams, locks, secondaries, and 22 other items of the mind in general, all of which are created by one little ornery, mean character named you. The PC dreamed them all up, all by his little lonesome and with no help of any kind whatsoever. He done it. But now that he's up and done it, he says, "What? The Dickens was wrong with me. And what did I do? And why?" And he's mishmashed into the overts of mystery and so on to such a tremendous degree. He's withheld so hard that he's forgotten it himself. And he doesn't know what cooks. He doesn't know what he is doing. He'd be very happy to say, "All right, you just tell me what I'm doing and I'll stop, you know. I'll knock it off. Honest I will, officer." But he doesn't know what he's doing. So I can tell you what he's doing. At the highest level, the highest echelon, he's at Axiom 2. That's what he's doing. And that is a truth in all else are agreed upon activities. Agreed upon truths, agreed upon now I'm supposed to's, and so forth. All laws below that point, there are actually only two truths in the universe. There is a Thetan, or Thetans, and they create. All right. Now, let's take a look at this basic aberration. He creates something. Somebody else creates something, and here we go with the factors. Well, there's no particular reason to go over the factors again, but they swap the ideas of creation, don't you see? This fellow creates what that fellow put up to be duplicated, and here we go. Now it gets more and more involved and more complex, and down at our echelon, what we find most annoying is we're in a body, we have an engram. engram contains physical pain and unconsciousness, and this engram, although it has uses, nevertheless victimizes the body and the person and so forth, and he's not comfortable with this engram, and he wants to know how to get rid of this engram. Well, there are several things you can do with the engram. One is erase it. That is an inhibited creation. Dianetics is the inhibition of the creation of mental image pictures and their eradication. Or the refamiliarization of the individual with the action of creation of the mental image picture. Now, this is the trouble a Thetan's in. He mocks up, let's say this is a mental image picture, ashtray here, he mocks up this mental image picture. With consent, yes. But he's consenting at some point of a time track he knows not what of. Actually, this thing is a copy of the physical universe, and he really didn't mean to copy it. Only he does copy things, only there it is, only he doesn't want it. So he goes crush. So he puts a counter-creation against his own creation. So here you have this thing being created while it's being uncreated, or counter-created against, and he says, where am I at? Well, he's lost on the time track because this thing to him can be fully as real as a moment in present time. When his stomach hurts, it hurts. There isn't any argument about that. Of course, that isn't even true, you know. You know that your stomach never hurts. You hurt. In the region of a stomach. But if a stomach was hurting and you weren't connected with it, it wouldn't feel anything. It takes you to feel it. Now, therefore, a stomach never hurts. A stomach causes you to feel a sensation of hurt. Well, how does that come about? It comes about through some kind of a communication system of which an engram is a part. All right, looking at the topmost echelon, then, of aberration, we find it must be compulsive creation, which is also compulsively counter-created. Now, if it was simply compulsive creation, without any counter-creation, this would become very simple. If the fellow felt all right about creating it, it wouldn't continue. You'd get volitional creation, which is all right. I'll give you an example of that. Let's say you have a half a dozen bricks in front of you and you're going to make a square of bricks. Well, now you don't have to make a square of bricks. See, you can either make a square of bricks or not make a square of bricks. It's all right with you. But after a while, you feel, well, maybe I ought to make a square of bricks. You know, it's been suggested, or I thought of it, or something. Maybe I ought to. Maybe I'm repressing myself from making a square of bricks. Now, if you go ahead and keep telling yourself that you mustn't make the square of bricks, you mustn't, the next thing you know, you make the square of bricks. Follow that? Well, that's all you're doing with an engram. Now listen, a mental image picture isn't stored any place. There is no standard bank. There is no reactive bank. Except as is created at that moment of observation by the Thetan. Now he may create it by having continuously creating something that creates it. You see, he can put it on a via. He can do all sorts of things in order to finally come up with an engram. But the point is, he's creating it. And the reason it stays created obsessively is because he doesn't think he ought to. He's inhibiting himself from creating the thing. As long as he continues to inhibit this, it will continue to be created. Now, of course, I'm talking in the high esoterics of the esoterotica. As a matter of fact, the rarefied air of what I'm talking about is so rarefied that it's incredible. Everybody knows life is complicated. Everybody knows that. When you break it down to just one law, my people get suspicious, you know. They say, ah, that sounds awful simple to me. Let's go make it complicated. That's the best thing to do. Let's take the engram and then get the countercreation of it, and then let's countercreate it this way, and then let's countercreate it that way, and then let's fix it up over this way, and let's transfer it and substitute it for that. That's good. Now we haven't any responsibility for it at all. There it is. Nothing to do with me. Of course, it does come up occasionally and hit me in the face, but there it is. That's actually hopelessly factually, too, all there is to the human mind. Axioms 1 and 2. Now you're waiting for me to say, well, you have to ride over Robin Hood's barn and burn it down before you finally come to the next complicated truth, because we all know it's very complicated. How can a mathematician get so complicated if life isn't complicated? Yeah, how can all these complications exist if life isn't complicated? That's a good question. But complications are withdrawals from responsibility. All you got to do to get complicated is just keep withdrawing one after... You know, have you ever met anybody who was living a complicated life? A very complicated life. You know how he got the life complicated? Well, he created something over here, and then he didn't take responsibility for it, and then he created something so it wouldn't disturb him in any way, and then he didn't take responsibility for that, and then he created something so that wouldn't disturb him, you see, and then he... no response. And all of a sudden, life is full of flaming eyes and sharp fangs, you know. He's really hedged around. Life croucheth everywhere. Well, there's another generalized truth concerning all this, and that is, if you haven't had a hand in the creation of it, it can't do a thing to you. Just like that. Axiom 2 is so factual. If you haven't had a hand in the creation of it, why, it can't do a thing to you. All you got to do is remove your share of the creation of it. And very weird things happen. Not just you, to you, but you'll find out they happen all around in odd concatenations. That's mostly because it's a complicated woof and warp of which your creations are a part. Your participation and contribution to any complicated or painful situation is absolutely necessary for you to suffer any pain or complication from it. Now, what would happen if you were to totally uninhibit a thetan in creating? If you were to just say, all right, go for broke, son, that's fine. Go on, create the lot. What do you suppose would happen? His reactive mind would disappear. His engram bank, so-called, would disappear. His lock secondaries. You'd get it clear, that's all. There is the basic theoretical one-shot clear, inherent in the first two axioms of the axioms of Scientology. Never once in a while I take a crack at trying to resolve this with a simplicity. Step 6, which is direct creativeness, creative processing, which is direct mock-up of the bank, runs into very heavy weather on too many cases. It's a road out, but it runs into too heavy a flashback. That's because a thetan is creating. We're very indebted to step 6. Don't ever regret it. Because in step 6, you get the proof of the fact that a Thetan is creating his whole bank. All you've got to do is improve his ability to create, and his whole bank improves. So there couldn't have been anything filed anyplace, don't you see? It just must be created on the spot. It's very easy to do this, you know. I'll give you an example. There was an old one dreamed up by one of the early boys in Dianetics. The running of pleasure moments. Instead of running the engram, you run the pleasure moment. Well, he thought this was pretty good. I was all suspicious of it and never adopted it in any way. But years and years later, found a use for this thing. You run a pleasure moment. You find a moment when somebody was enjoying himself. Of course, if you ask most people to recall a time when they enjoyed themselves, you know what happens. They'll be crying in a minute or two. But anyway, we asked this fellow to find a moment when he was enjoying himself, and then we run this thing just like you'd run an engram, only we improve it. You know, we run it to improve it, you know, pick it up, you know. And by golly, he'll get to a point there where he can actually taste the lobster dinner he is eating, you know. And he'll get so engrossed in eating this lobster dinner again that he'll be very annoyed with you if you distract his attention, perhaps. And the lobster is getting fatter and more solid, and the dinner is more solid, and he is more and more regressed into this moment of time. And that's all fine, except for this. Once you've got that lobster dinner 100% up the line, you know, so it is just terrific as a mental image picture, three-dimensional, you know, all perceptions and so forth, throw him into his tonsillectomy. It's now 100% three-dimensional, totally solid, all perceptics on full. And you watch him come off the willingness to create. No, 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 you know. He just backs right down. You get what I'm talking about? You improve a Thetan's ability to create, and you improve all parts of the bank. The conclusion is, then, that he is creating all parts of the bank and everything connected with his mind. Step 6, open the door to this. One of the ways that you yourself can demonstrate this is to run some little lock of some kind or another on a PC, just getting him to see it better, you know, and feel it better and work at it just this little moment of time, you know, beef it up, and have another moment someplace in the past, which is not an uncomfortable moment. And as you improve this lock, every once in a while, returning to this other moment and have a look at it. And you'll find out there's more data suddenly in it. There's more solidity to the second one. Okay? You're improving lock A, and you've got incident B back on the track someplace, and you're just using it for referral. Okay? All you're improving is lock A. Carefully don't improve incident B, you see? And the more you improve lock A, the more beautiful incident B becomes. And it gets more and more solid, and it gets more and more and more and more formidable as an incident. And he remembers more and more and more out of it. That, you might say, is one of the research demonstrations of does a Thetan mock up his own bank? You know, this was quite a discovery that a Thetan mocked up his own bank. Quite a discovery. On top of all the other discoveries, it was unexpected that a discovery of that magnitude would be lurking around to be made, you see, or that the problem really would simplify to this extent. But there it was. And every few years, I go back and dicker with it. I monkey with this thing. Is there a button, a command, a route, a possibility of just undoing the whole bank by using this known truth, this principle? is it? Well, there already exists a process that does not necessarily increase the bank. And the process is this process. And this, by the way, is a perfectly practical process. Whether all cases can run this process or not, that's something else. But it's a process, and it's usable, and if it runs, it runs. I've already mentioned it to you, I think. I'll give you the commands of it. What would you be willing to create? What would you rather not create? Works. Particularly if you run it on the other side and say, what would another be willing to create? What would another be unwilling to create? You can run these things one against the other. Now, whether or not your PC's case gets better has everything to do with how complicated he's gotten. In other words, how far away from Axiom 2 has this fellow gone? Because if he's 8 or 9 light years down the line, you're not going to find very much reality on what you're doing. It won't undo it, that's all. It won't undo these complications, so on, because you haven't undercut the case. But I call to your attention, we're not discussing right now undercutting cases. Though some thetans have pushed in to the muck up to their thetan ears. Well, that's rough, and we never sympathize with it, but we can do something about it. We get this process actually capable of doing quite a bit on a case that can run it. Now, the thing hasn't been run any time at all. There's been no real long, extended research on how long this process could be run or something. It's merely been run long enough to find out that it didn't kill the PC. Not even run long enough to find out if it made him better. But from this test process, I'm able to adjudicate certain trends in processing. And I find out that the conflicts of life break down basically to I will and you won't create. And I'm afraid that if you looked all the way down into the basis of any argument, those elements would turn up as the basic elements of the problem. I will and you won't. Got the idea? Now this flips around the other way, of course, as I won't and you will. We get communism, of course. Commissar says, I'm not going to create anything, but you certainly are. To the waker. Well, what's he done? He's fallen into his own basic postulate, so it still comes down to I will and you won't. Got the idea? Just because he's reversed valences on the thing doesn't mean the fundamental of it isn't still I will and you won't. Well, this is quite interesting. That's quite interesting. Because the inhibition of creativeness, then, would be one of the roughest things that the individual could run into in life. And so it is. We take PC after PC, and we ask them what was the roughest point of your life, and we find out it has something to do with the choosing of a career, schooling, whether or not they were going to paint, or something like this, you see. And somebody said, no. Or maybe they said it lightly, you know, and they didn't say no, you know. They said, well, dear, it's like this. Nice people don't do that. Or maybe it was all kinds of complications, such as... Well, actually, good girls never go on the stage. You know that. And, or it was, you can't make a living, you know. Can't make a living at it. Have to do something practical. And,
Or we get down the line and we find out that it's as early as kindergarten or early school of just somebody being cut to ribbon about his finger painting or something, you know, or his crayon sketches and so on. You can always pick these up on a PC. And they are very often very heavily charged. And it's simply an I will and you won't create. Now you dredge down into an awful lot of PCs, particularly the PCs who are not in very bad shape. And they'll tell you their primary goal is to rehabilitate their ability to paint or something like this. Their ability to paint or their ability to write or their ability to write poetry or some artistic action, or they'd like to be able to dance again or something like this, you know. They consider this an acceptable creativeness, but they've run into too many you won'ts. Now, they themselves have flipped on this somewhere down the line and have said you won't. Now, guess what level I'm talking about right now on your pre-addingness scale. I'm not giving you a lecture which is just dedicated to the esoterics of the up and beyond. I'm not beyond doing that to you, you know. But it has nothing to do with your auditing or anything else. But this one has a little bit to do with it. The case at peculiar or inverted interest is totally dramatizing just this one fact only. That's the only fact being dramatized. Won't create. There's not even an I will really associated with it to amount to anything. It's just a won't create. It's just a series of mechanisms of no create. And that's the total interest of the person. They're interested only in mechanisms which have to do with no creation. Now, if you think this is odd, that man would devote himself this strongly, we had a chap in town here in Johannesburg yesterday, I think it was, who put up the whistle for our troops for Katanga. And he got applicants on the basis of a telegram every 10 minutes. And he got phone calls and personal calls till the place was swamped. Unfortunately, he was only looking for high-ranking pilots that could be hired by Pan Am or South African Airways, but that was beside the point. He got the recruits. He was asking for men to go to war, to go almost classical on you, Mr. Gibbon, with his very fine book, Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire, comments upon this. And he says there's never any dearth of recruits or volunteers if you want to fight a war. It seemed to him that courage must be the cheapest commodity available. I think this is rather a wild look at it, and I disagreed with what he said there. But he did make a very interesting comment. He said, well, if you really want to engage in an activity where you can get everybody to cooperate, why you start a war? So here's this fellow down here. He's downtown right now, busy recruiting fellows for the Katanga Army in order to kill off Balubas or not kill Balubas or something of the sort, don't you see? Now, if you or I were to, say, put up a shingle out here and ask for people to construct or put together the Congo without killing anybody, I'm afraid we wouldn't have any takers to amount to anything. A few chaps would come around, an engineer or two, and wonder how many 100,000 pounds a year you're willing to pay them. But here are these other fellows, just regardless of pay, are willing to tear off to the Congo tomorrow, you know, amidst all the disease and yellow fever and everything else, just for the privilege of not creating. Just for the privilege of inhibiting creation. Of course, in its wickedest phrase, kill people. See, that's a good way to inhibit a creation. You can always get candidates. Very interesting, isn't it? Now, you know every one of those chaps down there, is it an inverted interest? Every one of them, inverted interest. Now, because we had a chap by the name of Sigmund Freud in our midst, and I'm very happy he was in our midst, by the way, because it gave me a kickoff when I was young, made me wonder what this was all about, directed my attention to it, but more importantly than that, he directed the attention of the whole world to the idea that there was a mind and there could be something wrong with it. If that was all he did, he'd have done his mission. So that's fine. But there's something more to it. He went and attached it all to the second dynamic. And when you get it all hooked into the second dynamic this neatly, of course, you tend to send the whole society in that direction a little bit because it's a very interesting subject. Have you ever noticed this? And there is where no create can be most easily dramatized. And so you find the handiest diagnosis of inverted interest to lie on the second dynamic. The individual either will not create or will not create in a manner to produce a creation. Got that? Well, that's all perversion is. We're going to create so there's no creation. You got the idea? Now, it isn't necessarily true that there must be a creation or must not be a creation. I'm just pointing out to you that at inverted interest, you get this thing quite stark over on the other side. It's just no create, there must not be any creation, and that is that. But we get, as substitutes for this, Freud called them sublimations, we get other creative activities, which aren't creative activities, you see, that have gone over aside so as to insist on the will create. See, the individual is over here on the I create with a must not create, and the activity is a create without any create. And that will be the total interest of the individual, will be a creation that doesn't create. See, he's got the two totally mishmashed. The I will and you won't create are all in a ball. See, and they're all jammed in together so that any creation is something it doesn't create. Well, I'll give you an idea. There's some types of painting that do this. You ever seen any of them? They're quite marvelous. I used to live down in the village. I was a pariah in Greenwich Village in New York City. I was a professional. I not only wrote for money, but I made lots of money writing. That's almost an outcast. Because I was really writing, and everybody in Greenwich Village that I would run into knew how you should conduct yourself. You should be a writer in order to talk about it a great deal and never write anything. But if you did write anything, never write anything that could be published. And if it did get published, you were, of course, a pariah. Because you had created. See, it had to be at this basis of of a creation that wasn't a creation. Oh, this was very funny. I used to finish up my work, and there'd be a bunch of these characters sitting around the living room, long hairs, you know. They'd be sitting around the living room. And I'd bat the breeze with them for a while and take them all out and buy them breakfast, probably the only meal they'd get that week. But they certainly could try to inhibit your creations. Man, would they dramatize inhibited creation.
And yet they were artistic people. No, they weren't artistic people. They were aberrated people. The Hell of Chelsea is now devoted exclusively to the deification of non-creativeness while wearing all of the right signs. See? The painter who doesn't paint, the artist who doesn't art. It's all quite amusing. In this world today, a person who is very productive in the world of the arts, like a painter or something like that, will very often accumulate people who are inhibiting creation. Because, of course, he doesn't accumulate them. They accumulate to him. You might ask yourself, well, why, if everybody in Greenwich Village in the field of writing considered a professional writer a pariah, why did they so often wind up in the small hours of the morning scattered around my basement flat? And yet there they were. And they would always tell me what was wrong. They never tell me what was right with anything. But of course, I was a little bit above being picked by any of this. They amused me enormously. And I laid down a horrible rule on them. And I said, well, you're not entitled to criticize any part of a story unless you can give a better solution to that part of the story. I used to lay down this rule every time they'd open their face too wide, you see, and I'd say, all right, all right, all right, you say that is a bad entrance. You say that is a bad entrance. Now you tell me how he should have entered. Oh, crowd, whoa. No, no, no. That's not fair. Because, of course, I would instantly be demanding that they create. And that was what they couldn't do. You got this? Well, all through the having the scale, you have these two factors. I will, and you won't create, showing up in various guises. And that is why, I can tell you today, havingness is such an important part of processing. The product of a creation is only less real than creating. Hence, havingness and the role it plays in auditing. Now, I knew this thing fit someplace, you know, that's right close in, because cases made gains on it and that sort of thing. But there are two types of creativeness in relationship to havingness. Type one is simply creating. And type two is creating because one doesn't have. It's creating because is the whole class of it. Creating because. First there's just creating, or simply I've seen two. And then there's creating because. And all of life then rather falls under this heading of creating because even a counter-create is a creation. Even the mass of energy necessary to smother an engram is a counter-creation, but it is still a creation. So there's creating because. And the usual one, the reason one creates because, is because one doesn't have. Now, you can look around you carefully and you will see no orchestra playing a minuet and your gowns are not dreamed up with the elaborate inner stays necessary to make a earlier century costume. It's not a ballroom. In other words, at this moment, you do not have a minuet going on in the ballroom. You just don't have one here in present time. So you create, because you don't have one, a minuet going on in the ballroom. As I've been talking about this, some of you have seen a minuet going on in the ballroom. Is that right?
Well, how come you got that minuet going on in a ballroom? Well, that's simply because you don't have one, that's all. So you made one. In other words, you mocked one up. Not quite as satisfactory as actually having a minuet going on in a ballroom. But I assure you, you were once able to do that. Way back on the backtrack. You thought to yourself and discussed it with somebody, let's have a minuet going on in a ballroom. Pow! And it was instantly a ballroom with a minuet going on, complete with orchestra. Then you probably got an argument because they wanted an orchestra made out of frogs and you wanted an orchestra made out of dogs or something. But once you got agreement, you had a minuet going on in a ballroom. Therefore, the whole pre-havingness scale is an I won't, you must create, or inverted as it becomes, I won't and you must create, or must won't, must won't, must won't, don't know what must won't, but must won't. Now, this is true about the mind, that if a person could wholeheartedly let himself create the worst and most vicious mental image picture he had in the bank, it wouldn't be there. It takes an inhibition of the creation in order to suspend it as a continuum. In other words, he has to fight against creating it in order to continue the thing in existence. So the ne plus ultra in getting rid of an engram is not erasing it, although that does more or less the same thing too. You know, making the fellow go through it is making him actually create it over and over. Would be to just uninhibit his creation of that engram. You know, it's sort of on the basis of, this is not a process, sort of on the basis, is there any reason you shouldn't have that? Give me a good reason why you shouldn't have a complete blow-by-blow, yank-by-yank account of your tonsillectomy. And if he got over all ideas on the subject of his tonsillectomy, that is, all ideas why he shouldn't have his tonsillectomy, unfortunately, he wouldn't have a picture of his tonsillectomy. He'd have to consciously make one now. He'd now have to consciously make one. I'm not necessarily trying to amplify your skill as an auditor. I'm merely trying to amplify your understanding of what you were looking at and what you were doing. Of course, you could say that fixing somebody up so he wasn't creating engrams all the time was the inhibition of his creating engrams. And this is the great oddity about life and the great oddity about the study of the mind. Once you reduce everything all the way down, everything becomes too, it's too easy, it's too simple. If you remove all inhibitions about the creation of an engram, you, of course, have done exactly the same thing as totally inhibit the creation of the engram. You've made it disappear, except you've made it disappear properly. It made it disappear because it's no longer inhibited. When you first start looking at this, you feel sort of spinny. In other words, if you were totally at liberty to totally create your bank, and there was no reason why you shouldn't create your bank, 100%, all the way, you'd have no bank. Now, why do you suppose you inhibit creating a bank? Well, one of the things, it might not lash back against you. You, a Thetan, if you fully created an engram. But it'd sure lash back at your body. Boy, would it. Now, out of a body, I'm perfectly willing to go over space opera combat. Out of a body. The fireballs and electronic cannon and so forth, as the stuff is mocked up, you see. It can be mocked up 100%. Because no electronic cannonball ever blew my head off. Hey, Phaeton. I didn't have one. I don't have one. I don't have a head. Of course, it feels a little warm when a totally mocked-up projectile of some sort goes by, or a bullet goes through the same space you're in. It sometimes tickles. But it doesn't destroy anything because you're not destructible. But it sure messes up your havingness. If you're in the middle of a head and a bullet goes through the same space you're in, you've got a hole. You see this? So your effort is to preserve your havingness. And therefore you inhibit the engram, which contains the threat to your havingness, and which demonstrably could practically, could destroy your havingness. Because I remember protecting my own skull one day. I even got under, first I got a pillow over my face, and then I practically got crawled under the couch. I was being very careless, and I was thinking about something or other. And I thought about some space opera, and I got a fireball, and it was a real live fireball, and it was coming straight at me, which is not too bad. But I suddenly realized that it was also coming at my head, which I was wearing carelessly. You should preserve these things, you know, for parties and things. Lectures and parties, you should wear heads, but not thinking about things idly like that, you know. And I actually had just a pure reflex action, picked up a pillow, you know, and got it in front of my face quick, you know. Because it was red hot. It was a red hot engram. Now, you're getting along all right. You're sailing around in space. You're kind of lonesome. There's nobody much to talk to. And some of the churches we've had in the last couple of thousand years object to a spirit. They do. They do. Don't you ever read the baptism ceremony that's used in one of the principal churches in the world today? Well, it doesn't say this in so many words, but it does use "you foul demon." And it says, "you get out of that head, you foul demon, and get out of that body and scram." It does. You want to go look it up? It's there. And that's a baptism ceremony which is used on maybe a tenth of the world's population. That's interesting. If a fellow thought he was a foul demon, he'd drop the mock-up right there, wouldn't he? They used to even object to the farmers leaving out saucers of milk for you in the Middle Ages. They'd been very, very narrow-minded about the whole thing. The witch doctor in South Africa rose to his prominence by getting rid of evil spirits originally, and then witches. Then he began to call them witches, hence the word witch doctor. And a Phaeton who's sailing around without a body is not looked kindly upon by the current religious activities. They don't like this. I'm not joking. They don't like it. But practically all of their advance in the world is preventing people from being assailed by Phaeton sailing around without bodies. Because a Phaeton who doesn't have a body to preserve, of course, is very uninhibited on what he does. And they think this is a bad thing. Oh, you run into this sometime in processing if you have no reality on it right now. But it's interesting. But the moment you have something that you were trying to preserve or any other of the points of the pre-havingness scale, you are unwilling to let the thing go into a total create. See, you could do it out of your head, but if you were to totally mock up, I assure you, if you were to totally mock up an automobile accident while you were in your automobile would catch it. See, I'm talking about a total. It'd catch it. And even if you mocked it up just slightly, you'd get nervous enough about your driving, you'd probably scrape a fender.
Got the idea? So the preservation of havingness is the primary problem that Thetan has. And of course, he is capable of mocking up so many fantastic things. That wouldn't affect him particularly if he wasn't surrounded by a body or something. That he then starts inhibiting his bank because he is in a body. Quite simple. He starts inhibiting his creation of engrams and facsimiles and so forth. And he says this is a preservation of the thing. Now, it's quite interesting that we have developed a system by which it can be done. You can actually take Scientology and you can get an individual to knock them out without getting his head knocked off. It's quite amazing. Now, if you could exteriorize and be 2,000 or 3,000 feet up while your body was sitting in the auditing chair acting as a communication relay point, you could run engrams like a bomb. There'd be nothing to it. You know, you just run them. Zing, bang, let them go. Who cares? Not going to do anything to you, but give you a few tickles and a few aches and pains and so forth, but you're quite capable of experiencing these things, you see, as long as your havingness isn't being destroyed. One would say the optimum method of auditing would be to audit somebody outside of his body. One would say. Providing it could be done. But individuals are, again, so worried about their havingness that they get right inside their heads, you know, and they take real good care of the mock-up. So when you audit them, they're very much pinned down, particularly at first. They're very pinned down. They're right in the middle of their havingness. You say, now mock up an engram that would destroy a body. No, no. It is not going to do that, that's all. So therefore, you have to take the edge off the bank without re-enlivening the entire bank. And that's the trick. You'll find out as the fellow goes up along the line that he should get more and more. That's your clear read, by the way. Your clear read is basically the body reading only without the Thetan reading. You get a mockery of the read. You see down below, Thetan's so dead in his head and so careful that he doesn't create anything, you know, that he's non-detectable. He isn't creating any masses of any kind whatsoever. He's got it all inhibited. And of course, he'll read a clear read. Dead body. Dead body reads the same way. But you get the Thetan up to a point where he himself doesn't have to hold on to the body with claws and chains and so on. And, of course, he again doesn't read. There'd be 2 points on the meter where a Thetan didn't read. It'd be so dead but present that he's undetectable. Present but so dead he's undetectable. You run into those cases. Lots of them around. And the other one is up the line, is he is so unanxious about his havingness that he doesn't have to put a beam on the body every time you sneeze. And there again, he will read at a clear read without a reaction on the needle just because you say something to him. That's way up and way down. Now, in the middle span, where most of you inhabit, you're nervous. You start to run an engram, and the immediate thought is, what's this going to do to the body? Maybe not a conscious thought, but it's there. What's this going to do to the body? So you damp it out, tame it down. Then you find out, well, it isn't going to do anything terrible to the body, so you let go of it. In other words, you become willing to create it, at which moment it ceases to be created. That's what's known as running one out. Therefore, by bringing about a less aberrated idea about happiness, you can process somebody to a point where he's in good shape. By changing his ideas, then, about happiness, not necessarily by letting him have less, he'll actually wind up having more. Why, you can move a fellow up the line by changing his ideas about happiness. Hence, the pre-havingness scale, with those various points cleaned up, brings a person up to a point where his anxiety about happiness isn't so great that he has to slap every engram he ever mocks up against his body, thus knocking his body to pieces just because he thinks of creating something. You follow that? Well, now that's what you're looking at when you audit somebody. You're looking at somebody with an anxiety about havingness, and because he wants to preserve the havingness, he, of course, doesn't dare mock up the full intensity or velocity of the bank. He's inhibiting it. He's trying to be not responsible for mocking up a bank which will knock apart his havingness, namely a body or his effects. And you're trying to get him up to a point where his anxiety is sufficiently cooled off that he can back off a little bit, not be quite as tight about it all. And then you'll find out that he can mock up much more vicious engrams, only they're not knocking him to pieces, which they wouldn't anyway. They're not knocking his havingness to pieces. The contest is how to rehabilitate creativeness without destroying the havingness of the thing. It's pretty interesting as a problem. But you have the answers in your pre-havingness scale. All you have to do is de-intensify his aberrations along these particular points on the pre-havingness scale, and you'll find out that he will start backing off, and there he goes. Now, of course, it is help that gets him in to the valence situation, where he thinks he is a body and so forth. It's failed help, actually. He helps and fails to help, and he gets switcheroos and so forth. And you can back him out, and gradually, why, by improving his havingness, you give him less anxiety about the havingness he has, and so give him very much greater freedom in his creativeness. And when that freedom in his creativeness becomes tremendous, he, of course, is clear. So another definition for clear could be said to be uninhibited creativeness, as far as a bank is concerned, or parts of the mind. Thank you.